Welcome to The Way Podcast, found at podcasttheway.com. This is FM 91.7 WHUS at the top of the hour, and today's topic is hemp. Now, before I start the podcast, I'd like to say the views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of the station. Now, I'm sitting with Beth, who knows a lot about this topic, and I'll let her introduce herself and tell a little bit about how she knows about hemp.
Having me today. My name is Beth. I go by the Hemp Huntress, and I have been in legal hemp since it's been legal, about the past 5-6 years. And I have worked with my local Oregon Department of Agriculture to working with farmers, selling seed, brokering deals, product placement, compliance, just kind of all over the last couple of years as this industry went from, you know, illicit to legal with the Farm Bill. So I had my hands in just about everything and several states learning about and participating in getting hemp legalized and out there more.
According to Forbes, I have a statistic that says hemp is about 0.2 to 0.3% THC, while marijuana is 3 to 15 to sometimes even 30%. But you were mentioning the history. Can you tell me a little bit about the history and some of that look that hemp has had?
Yeah, hemp's had a very interesting American history. As far back as the early 1900s, we were growing hemp as one of our agricultural products for paper. It was just a regular product, an agricultural product in the country. And what happened was hemp got rolled into the 1937 Marijuana Tax Act. And once that happened, it really discouraged people from wanting to produce hemp. Similar to what we struggle with now, if it's going to be too costly to grow it and you're not going to be able to make a profit, people aren't going to be interested or heavily regulated. So that started to discourage people. Then you have the war effort that reignited hemp. In 1942, the infamous Hemp for Victory program, and you can do a Google search, there's a black and white film all about people, growing hemp. And I believe it was upwards of 100 to 150,000 acres were being grown for the war effort. And that's, for rope, for paper. They were really just diving into what they could do with hemp at that point. But along comes 1970s where, the crackdown again comes into cannabis and drugs in general, and hemp gets rolled in with cannabis marijuana and falls under the Controlled Substance Act, which basically kills hemp until the late 90s, almost 2000. And Richard Rose, great resource, Richard Rose was in the fight for hemp seed and hemp oil and protein, probably a lot sooner than that, but more we saw it in the retail market. Even Costco has, I believe, still hemp cereal, hemp bars, hemp milk. So those type of products, were around. But the controversial products that are out now really started kicking in, like we talked about, in 2018. It's hard because hemp can produce, just about any product. Popular Mechanics said back in the late 30s that hemp could be used to make 25,000 different products. And that still stands today. So my excitement is it's a disruptive product. I'm a disruptive capitalist. I love when things come along and can kind of alter the course better. And that's what hemp is right now because of how much it can do and what it can be used for.
Got it. That's just ludicrous to me that you have. We'll talk more about the benefits of hemp and what makes it so great, but you have this great product with no THC, and weed itself is already this great, this new drug where people don't even really care about it. They see it as better than alcohol even. And Well, to talk about what makes hemp so good, what can you make with hemp? What are some products?
Some of the things that people know the most of, you know, that are getting a lot of talk is apparel. You know, we see everything from back in the day, you know, the hemp bracelets and necklaces. But Levi's announced that they will again be making hemp jeans. And that is where Levi started. They made hemp jeans because back then you bought one pair of jeans. And they really did last you your whole life because they were made out of hemp. So apparel, I think we're going to see a lot more hemp. And the one that I'm most excited about personally is plastics. Is, you know, replacing plastics with hemp. And Legos has committed to altering from plastic to hemp plastic for all Legos over the next 10, 20 years. So I think that's going to help drive that market as well. But, you know, I think people would actually be surprised at, you know, what you can make with hemp. You know, so we have those that we've talked about, but, you know, housing, hempcrete is a wonderful, wonderful building material. Australia uses it a lot in some of their villages because it is not only fireproof, but it is up to 30% more energy efficient. So you don't necessarily need an air conditioning in the heat. The way hemp works with the lye and the building materials, it actually breathes and is just an amazing building material. So, you know, like I said, there's just so many things. You know, the Henry Ford car we saw that was made with hemp, and I believe Lexus, the inside panels of their cars, they use hemp. If we get to the Olympics, the Chinese have been using hempcrete mixed in with regular concrete. The only reason they didn't use full hempcrete is we don't have enough hemp. So it's a market that is just ready to explode in all areas. But as I say that, you can list off every one of those industries and the people that have huge corporations or huge investments in timber or construction materials, et cetera, are going to panic if they're not a part of hemp, because it will disrupt the market and take it over eventually.
Yeah, according to Forbes, another statistic I found was more than 25,000 products can be made from hemp.
Mm-hmm.
And with all of those products and all those you listed, and I want to talk about the plastic one again in a minute, was there this whole war on drugs and this whole thing, was there any just lobbying where these corporations wanted to stick with what they had? Or was it just pure fear of drugs?
No, you know, there's stories and there's, you know, diaries and written history that Hearst definitely supported Anslinger. You know, there were people that were into oil, that were into timber, that they saw what was coming down. And one of the other things that's not talked about a lot is when Henry Ford did that car, he was working on being vertically integrated. As in, hemp oil would run the car, he'd build the car on hemp. And at that time, you know, there was a lot of business people fighting for, you know, the industry and the growing America here. And so that was another reason they wanted to stop hemp, was it was a way to slow Henry Ford down. So there was a lot of business reasons why they did not want hemp to succeed. It was cutting into their bottom line. I mean, that's just not, you know, that's something that just never changes. So Hearst definitely saw his chance with Anslinger to roll hemp in with cannabis and, you know, say it's all evil. We got to get rid of it.
Took advantage of his opportunity. Mm-hmm. And you say this is found in cars like Ford, and that may sound odd that this plant is like that, but cannabistech.com, it says that hemp is 5 times stiffer and 3.5 times more durable. And also National Hemp Society said 2.5 times stronger. So I don't know the difference between those two, but it's that much more durable than traditional plastics. So it's a strong plant that can be used for a lot of things. And now, say water bottles, it's stronger than plastic. So why do we still have the regular plastic that we have today?
Well, I think with anything, thing. You've moving business, you know, is not going to be a quick thing. You do need to set up the infrastructure to create the industry. So first, we need to start growing more in industrial hemp. But those farmers are going to want to know, before I start throwing out, you know, thousands of acres of in industrial hemp, who's going to buy it? And there's new equipment to buy. You know, one of the main reasons we're going to be able to flourish in industrial hemp is decortification. That was some machinery that I'm trying to remember, and I'd say it was like late 40s, maybe late 30s, but I think late 40s before we had machines that could decord the hemp. And you can imagine, if a plant is that durable, it's also that hard to work with by hand, which is how, you know, we were farming back in the early 1900s. So you've got an infrastructure that needs to be set up on the farm. Then you have an infrastructure that needs to be set up at factories. We need to make, you know, a manufacturing plant for those things. So it's going to take, you know, investors, and again, the disruption of your taking business away from other companies means you have a battle on your hands. So it's going to take a while, but the more we get this legal and the more we get people growing and involved, I think that's where we'll see, you know, entrepreneurs that say, yeah, we do need to invest in the future. We do need to move this way, but it'll take time.
I have a statistic from hempplasticcompany.com. And as of 2018, 335 million tons of plastic are produced globally each year. Mm-hmm. And 45% of all plastics are produced in the U.S. And I heard that hemp plastic is biodegradable. How biodegradable is it?
100%. It's a plant.
100%? How long would it take to biodegrade in a landfill?
I wouldn't be able to give you the statistic. And I'm saying 100%, but it's also based on how people are going to make things, you know, because we do have, unfortunately, we have the ability to take good things and throw chemicals into them. So I think the thing that I also don't mind that's taking a minute is that a lot of these entrepreneurs are small and working on ways to create, and hemp plastics is a good company, you know, to create ways that hemp plastics are done in a safe manner. So the biodegradability part really is going to depend on the manufacturing part.
Got it. I want to back towards history. I heard George Washington, he had a farm on Mount Vernon where he had acres of hemp growing. Is that correct?
Yes, and actually as of last harvest, there is hemp growing there again. And it's now a historical visit you can do. Doug Fine, who I can't speak enough of, I got to meet him once. He's an author, and I call him, I just say he's like the modern father of hemp in America. But Doug Fine worked with the folks out there, and they are growing hemp again in Mount Vernon and showing how George Washington did it, how they would have traditionally harvested it. And he's got some pretty cool pictures up. They wore the traditional, you know, clothing and got out there and harvested by hand. And it was pretty neat. So it is back. George Washington, Mount Vernon, and hemp are together again.
Nice. I wonder if he had any the other kind of cannabis in that mix for when he's leading his country. That'd be interesting.
Yeah, you know, that's one of the things that you just it's hard to tell because there was no testing back then of, you know, how much CBD or how much THC was in these plants that were growing. But we do know that even back then, from diaries from different farmers, that, you know, a lot of the farmers' wives were finding out from when, you know, they'd be out harvesting the hemp that they could make topicals from it. You know, many, you know, again, when we're talking early 1900s, very self-sufficient, hardy people. And when you're on the farm and, you know, somebody hurts their hand or they have swelling, they were learning, oh, look, we can crush this plant up and mix it with some lavender. We can mix it with this, and it helps swelling, and it helps this. So there's some interesting written diaries from the 1930s, 1920s, where they were already learning just that hemp was even more than what they were using it for.
The oils used, it can heal wounds and stuff like that?
Oh, it'll help with inflammation.
Huh. Interesting.
So, yeah, you have the body has an endocannabinoid system. It's only been a couple of years that mainstream doctors are studying it, but you do have what's called an endocannabinoid system. So cannabinoids, THC, CBD, you'll start hearing about CBG, CBDA, all kinds of different cannabinoids in the plant work naturally with your endocannabinoid system. And so topicals, CBD topicals work with the endocannabinoid system and the receptors in your skin. The oils work with, you know, different systems. And that's where you hear about, you know, different children finding relief from seizures, Parkinson's finding relief as well from oil. And I'm using my words carefully because these are anecdotal. And we just, you know, again, 2018, it just came off the scheduled Controlled Substance Act. So we can now get some real research going. So everything I'm sharing is anecdotal, but easy to find.
You mentioned farmers a minute ago. And, well, how easy or hard is it to grow this plant? I read that it doesn't require a lot of water. I read that it grows very quick. I read it doesn't require pesticides, herbicides. What's it like for the farmer growing this plant?
And that's the thing. It really is, I'm not going to say easy, it's hard work. But yeah, it's not the traditional need for the pesticides or the herbicides. The roots of the plant are incredible. They will go searching for water. So, and we're talking, you know, especially in industrial hemp, the roots are really hardy. They go searching for water. A lot of times, if it's planted properly, the shade from the plant, you don't even have to pull weeds. A lot of times, you'll see the other thing is people will plant far enough so that you can just, you know, plow through the weeds in between rows. And you can get, depending on where you're at, you can usually get two seasons of hemp in some areas, one season in others. And, you know, we're learning in different areas. But especially if Holland has some really large operations, it's a combinable product, meaning just like you see combines going out taking in corn, we will again in America see thousands of acres of hemp and a combine going along and growing it. But again, when I say this, I'm excited and people might be like, wow, why aren't we doing this? But again, as a disruptive capitalist, I want to point, we have an uphill battle against people that sell pesticides, an uphill battle against people that make a living off of herbicides. And when you start growing hemp like this, that's yet another business that I'm happy, you know, will take a hit, but it's still going to take a hit and there's going to have to be some adjustments.
You're also, it's kind of, well, part of capitalism where the new right. company comes over, takes over the old one. You have to adapt with the times too.
Oh, I'm all for that. Like I said, I shamelessly love to see innovation, companies that can pivot, change, grow. I mean, that's really what I, you know, I thrive on and love seeing. And that's what this offers up. I mean, it offers up an opportunity for, you know, farmers that really want to be in control of their own crop from seed to finish. And that's what I heard from farmers directly was, you know, why are you switching from corn? Why are you switching from alfalfa? Well, I have more control over my farm, my growing, my seed, where I'm buying it, what I'm growing. And that was very important to them because that has changed dramatically with different companies such as Monsanto that are very much in control of seed. So this gives an opportunity for the farmer to be back in charge of their own farm.
I watched a short YouTube documentary about tumbleweeds are this major invasive plant. They spread like wildfire. They absorb all the water. Farmers can't stand them because they ruin their crops. The USA actually went to like a small war with them. And you mentioned prior that this hemp plant has strong roots that can spread around and search for water. Are they an invasive species at all that we have to watch out for?
The roots will go deep, but I don't think it's an invasive species, but there are some states that have listed hemp as an invasive species because they haven't been able to eradicate it because it is hardy. So again, technically it is listed as an invasive species in a couple of different states where there is still, you know, again, they call it an invasive species, and I'm like, oh, thank goodness we still have some good 1930s natural American hemp growing. We can bring it back. So it is that hardy that it can be. But it's not an invasive species, as in it's not like bamboo. It's not going to jump over the fence at you. But the roots are going to keep coming back. And, you know, the other thing with the roots of hemp and farmers, and a lot of people don't realize, is many countries use hemp as a rotational crop to clean up the soil. It helps, you know, really pull out any chemicals, any toxins. And it's really a great rotation crop that farmers use around the world as they're rotating their crops around to replenish soil. And that is just definitely another thing that in different areas like the northeast of the country and different areas where we have lead in the soil and, you know, have suffered from pollution, we have a chance to really bring back some healthy, hardy soil to grow everything in. Our vegetables, just bring back a lot of good, healthy, organic stuff from the ground.
Yeah, that'd be great. There's just so many pollutants that hemp could clear up. I didn't even know about that one that you just mentioned. And you mentioned another, bring it to the world. I heard China is a huge exporter, huge user of hemp. Have they been on this bandwagon for a bit now?
Yes. And it's in industrial hemp that they have a lot of their apparel. When you see cotton blend and it's made in China, more than likely, as in an 80% chance, that's 50% hemp, 50% cotton. Last I looked, the largest company, and I honestly cannot pronounce it, but they have a 1 million-acre manufacturing plant and they claim over 1 million acres of hemp growing, but with that much clothing that they produce, I believe it. And the exciting part, again, if we can get the right people interested, is they would like to import industrial hemp from America because they need more. So we have an opportunity to create an export business that hasn't really ever existed in our country and could, you know, especially right now, any help we can get in creating, helping the economy, we have a great export product. Just waiting.
Over here in Connecticut, tobacco was a big thing for a while. My grandma used to work on a tobacco farm when she was like 15. And then Colorado legalized weed, tons of tax income there. Mm-hmm. And according to Forbes, in 2012, the U.S. hemp industry was worth about $500 million. So as it becomes legalized, as we use more of this product and let any of these uses be used, I only see that going up.
And dramatically, because if you're just going to say hemp in general, I mean, we can't even probably come up with a figure. I mean, CBD is a business in itself that I believe this year is $20 million. And that's not something we predicted even 3 years ago. So the innovation, I honestly have no idea where this could go. It's where they're going to let us go. You know, we're really fighting the compliance, the research, and decades of propaganda. But when we move forward, yeah, there's just so many opportunities. And I can see it, you know, hitting what sounds crazy, but, you know, numbers like trillions of dollars, especially once we're exporting, we're up and running. And then you're infusing the economy again with, like I said, we need new tractors. We need decortification machines. We're going to need new manufacturing machines. I mean, when I start saying this stuff, I don't know. I'm 51, and I know a lot about American history, and I think that's what we're really all about here is let's manufacture, let's grow, let's, you know, we have all these resources. Not only can we create income and opportunity within the country, we can export it instead of importing what we need. We can be exporting, and that's a much better position to be in than having to import something.
Bring it back to the farmers.
Yep.
Do they, according to the article from The Guardian, the DEA still threatens some farmers, such as Mike Lewis in Kentucky, even for growing hemp?
Yep.
Even though it's technically legal, why is that a thing? Is that common? How do they go through that?
You know, I have to take myself out of my bubble because I'm in Oregon. So we hear these stories and we're like, what? But having traveled around the country and talking to different people, yes, it still happens to this day. There are stories that sound crazy but are true. The poor woman that I believe she was in her 60s that had her CBD pen, and it was clearly CBD, and she got arrested, and it was legal. And you have, you know, a truck driver that was legally hauling hemp, had all his paperwork, but the police in Idaho decided, oh, that makes a great photo op and looks like we made the biggest cannabis bust ever. So there's a lot of reasons why it still happens, but it all centers from that propaganda, dare I say, ignorance of facts. It really is still, there's still people that think it's, you know, the devil's lettuce. And, you know, we're not even having the cannabis discussion. We're still here just talking about hemp. And I watched people, you know, talk about, oh, I'll never let that hemp grow. I got to protect my children. And I understand I hear the fear, but it's really coming from a place that, unfortunately, again, decades of propaganda and a lot of misinformation out there.
So is it just these cops that are part of the propaganda, or is it the community calling the cops on these people, or?
It's both. I mean, and that's why it's really important. And I know around here, you know, we clearly mark our hemp fields, but I think a teenager in Southern Oregon knows the difference between a hemp field and a cannabis field, where someone, say, in Pennsylvania, where they just started growing hemp, teenager, it looks, I mean, I know the difference, but I understand, you know, somebody driving by going, wow, that looks just like pot. And it's just growing out in a field. Oh my goodness. You know, and all those fears and, oh my goodness, there's going to be drugs in my town. You know, I mean, all those things that work with propaganda start getting into people's heads, and they will call police or, you know, even you talked about that, you know, 0.02%. I have watched farmers lose fields because their THC hit 0.025%. Because a rainstorm came in and the plant, to protect itself, does what it does, and that increased the THC a little bit. And the panic of, oh my God, we have to destroy this is, you know, I'm laughing, but I must recognize that unfortunately there's still people that, you know, lack of knowledge, they have a lot of fear. And that's what I want to work on, is removing that fear. This is a plant, and it's, you know, it's got history in this country, and we just need to get back to talking about it realistically and factually.
I'd like to say two things. One, I've been watching this show called The Midnight Gospel. It's on Netflix. It's called Space Gas. It's a podcast, mm-hmm. but they show an animation. Have you seen it?
Oh, yeah. I just watched two of them the other night.
Oh, I love that show. I'm so hooked on it. I almost don't want to watch it because I'm afraid to watch the end. But the first episode, One of the quotes that stuck with me, there's no such thing as a bad drug. Even though this isn't really a drug, all drugs use their purpose. It's about how you use them or abuse them. Yeah, just yeah. That goes with any drug. And this thing, 0.02% THC. And weed now. And since my parents' time or my grandparents' time, weed has become, I believe, 3 to 5% stronger. Don't quote me exactly because I don't remember the exact stat. But due to how it's farmed and how their hybrids are created, it becomes stronger and stronger. And now, yeah, it's just stronger weed. So is it possible for hemp to go through that same pattern where we decrease THC, where we combine hemp products to lower it to even get rid of more fear, or will it grow like weed?
The science nowadays is pinpointing, is actually pretty amazing. It's really pinpointing in on the genetics of the seeds. So this year should be a really good year for farmers to have been able to buy seed that will grow exactly what they want it to grow and will be below that percentage. But there is a lot of genetic and a lot of research, a lot of seed genetic study and a lot of research that needs to be done. But ASTA, the American Seed Trade Association, has been at this for a few years, and they're really working on getting the science down. Because again, we came from an illicit market, even if it was hemp, you know, and people weren't getting high, it was still an illicit market. And so people were, you know, using seeds, and it was CBD, but we didn't have testing, all these new scientific ways to understand the plant specifically. So my long story there is to get to the point of within years, you will be able to go to a farm and the farmer will be able to say, hey, in this field, I have plants growing that are going to produce CBD around 15%, CBG at about 2% with zero THC. In this field, I have a plant, you know, growing CBDL because it's better for this. And that's what we're learning, is what cannabinoid helps what. And when that research gets done, it's going to be getting done at the same time seed geneticists are working, and we will have it, you know, narrowed into a solid science. But for right now, it's very risky. And that's, you know, that's one of the things that I think is important for anybody that wants to get into hemp, is to understand it is still an industry that's in growth. There is still risk, and there is still a lot unknown as we innovate and learn. But I mean, it's exciting if you're up for that.
Sorry if I missed, but what kind of risks are you talking about?
The risks where there is not a lot of studies on seed genetics. So we're still, you know, working with what we have. And, you know, there are still people that will grow 100 acres of hemp, even 10 acres of hemp. And it is seed that has always produced CBD and kept the THC at below 0.02. But some weird, you know, phenomenon comes through of a storm. Extra, we're finding heavy rainstorms can make it happen. Different weather will make your plant now produce more THC. And if you don't harvest it in time, or you don't get it tested and find out in time, you can lose your whole crop. And that's a lot of money to lose.
All right. If say this a farm is out in California where they have forest fires, or say if somebody just smokes it themselves, even with the low THC content, will they still be able to get high off it?
When it comes to smoking CBD or smokable craft hemp, you don't get high. If there is a higher amount of THC, that's the psychoactive component. But the CBD itself is more of an anti-inflammatory, anti-anxiety in what we think we understand is, again, anti-inflammatory with different cells in the brain. So the molecule CBD kind of calms everything down and helps with inflammation. And that means a lot of times people feel high because they have been relieved of pain they've been feeling, but you don't get high off CBD. Now, if you mix, you know, and you'll see edibles or, you know, even cannabis that is, you know, say 7% CBD and 7% THC. That is going to give you a different effect because you are now including the THC. So that is going to react with your body in a more psychoactive manner. And again, what you were talking about, there's some really high percentages out there that if, you know, that are for certain people that either recreationally want to go there or, you know, high rates of pain and are using it for that.
A little anecdote. I was on a trip and my friend offered me something to smoke and I smoked it and he told me after it was CBD, like a few minutes after. And at the time, I didn't know what CBD was. So I kind of had a second freaking out, like, what I just smoked? Am I going to hallucinate? Am I going to, what the hell, what the heck is this? So, yeah, I bugged out for a minute. And then he ended up telling me that's kind of just to, like, relieve stress in a sense. I don't know. I guess I didn't smoke enough. I didn't feel too much of a difference, but is it a placebo or does it actually reduce anxiety or actually make you feel calmer, if anything?
Well, I think, you know, anything can be a placebo, to be fair. Also, I'm going to be fair and say, hey, breathing, just taking a moment to take in some breaths is good. And smoking CBD is better than breathing in a cigarette. But in all seriousness, it's, you know, I'll talk to my neighbor. He enjoys smoking CBD because, again, he doesn't get the psychoactive effect, but his very, very stiff shoulder, it'll improve range of movement within 5-10 minutes of smoking CBD. There's other people that, you know, do find with high anxiety that it calms them down. A lot of people like tinctures more for that because it's quicker, and tinctures, you know, with the eyedropper, and you can put it, you take it sublingually right under the tongue. So, you know, I would say it's really, if there's nothing that ails you and you don't have extreme anxiety or, you know, I don't think when you smoke CBD, you're going to feel anything different. At the same time, I would say it definitely didn't hurt you. And it probably affected you the same way a really good vitamin or a really good protein, you know, it's something good for your body. But yeah, I don't think you would feel any different, you know, smoking unless you were in pain or you're working for, you know, towards some extreme anxiety.
I will say, because of context of not knowing what was, I did get extreme anxiety for 5 seconds.
Of course.
A little bit right there, but okay, I get it. All right. So bringing it back. Actually, no. First. What's the difference between CBD and essential oils?
So CBD is, you know, a molecule that's being extracted from a plant. Essential oils are, you know, they're being extracted from a plant. So the wonderful thing about them together is if you understand plant science, I do not. I work for a company that does, CBDRevolution.com. Just throw that out there. They have 15 years experience in formulating essential oils and CBD, and it's very similar. So you are, you know, when you're extracting from lavender, when you're extracting from any plant, you're pulling out its oils. And that is what we're doing with the hemp plant. We are extracting the CBD out, you know, and you'll hear different terms, but full spectrum is what we like. It's all the good natural plant flavonoids, terpenes, everything about the plant. So your essential oils, it's a very similar process, and it's why when infused properly, the two together are really pretty phenomenal. I have seen some pretty wild results with CBD topicals that are done with properly infused essential oils and CBD. And again, not a cure. I mean, I really want to be clear. I am not saying this is some miracle cure, but it's another addition to natural product use, my own generation. I'm really trying to figure out how we stick with plants over pills, that kind of thing. And that's where the topicals come in for me, is I'd much rather put on a CBD topical and have the inflammation go down than take a pill.
Got it. So a new issue coming up or arising is microplastics. So bringing it back to plastic and a podcast, I believe I was told like 70% of breast cancer cases had microplastic appearing or something like that. I won't say exactly because I'm not too certain. But with this hemp plastic being biodegradable, with it being a plant, do we have to worry about microplastics?
You know, I would count on some innovation coming that I don't see why hemp isn't something that would be able to, you know, again, replace the actual plastic. It's similar to, best example I could give is most exfoliants use microplastics, which, you know, so then you're exfoliating your skin with microplastics. Doesn't really make much sense. So there's jojoba, and that's a natural exfoliant that you can use, another, you know, plant. So I think my opinion, based on what I've seen over several years of legal hemp and even more years of people doing their own research behind the scenes, shall we say, I don't think there's not many things we can't innovate forward, that we can't move away from non-biodegradable to biodegradable and move to sustainable, regenerative. I really think it's almost getting back to where we veered off in the late 30s. And maybe I'm just super hopeful, but I really believe that. I really believe there's innovation and solutions to each and every one of these issues that come up with plastics and non-biodegradable products.
Got it. If you can't answer this question because it's kind of scientific, but say I had 100% plastic hemp, could I safely eat it? Do you know?
I mean, I wouldn't want to, but...
Well, you probably wouldn't want to, but you probably could. No, I'm trying to think, because I'm trying to think, what do I have here? But that's not 100% hemp. I have a lid on a stash jar that's made with hemp, but it's also made with recycled material. So yeah, I wouldn't be able to eat that one. But, you know, I again, based on, and I'm like you, I'm not the scientist, but I've been around for a few years and my brain went to, okay, well, if we, you know, create hemp oil to create the hemp plastic, yeah, you probably wouldn't enjoy it, but I don't see where it would hurt you.
Got it. All right, I want to throw, I think I'm running out of questions, so I think I'm going to wrap up this podcast. I have a few statistics before my next question that I just want to throw out for the listeners to emphasize. Pollution's a big issue. Plastic's a big issue. And I say this coming from Hemp Plastic Company. 29% of plastics produced in the U.S. are used for packaging, 15% building, 14% consumer. The packaging market in the U.S. alone is $100 billion. I guess that doesn't relate to pollution as much, but in the United States, over 60 billion pounds of plastic are discarded into the waste each year, from 4 billion in 1970. One half of all discarded plastic comes from packaging. So again, if we use hemp plastic for packaging, almost one third of this packaging is discarded soon after use. Beach litter is 40 to 60% plastic. Obviously, it's hazardous to birds, fish, animals that get entangled or ingest it. That's the just. Oh, and according to The Guardian, 38 million pieces of plastic were found on one single island. So those are the gist of my statistics for plastic. We need to find some innovation to cut down on this pollution. This could be a very good alternative. Am I correct in saying that?
Oh, 100%. It's, you know, it's like I said, when I saw Legos make the jump, it gave me some hope that we're going to make some big impacts into that industry, because that is just a pet peeve of mine that, yes, we have way too much packaging. And, you know, I guess hats off to the plastic lobby groups, but it's not good for humans. And there's, you know, it's, again, like we talked about, it's frustrating and there's no reason for it other than we need to get that infrastructure going. We need to get the right, you know, regulations out of the way so that we can get, you know, farmers growing. And I don't know, just all the way through, it doesn't make sense that we stay on this plastics path when we have a path from start to finish that is good for everyone. Everyone, including the American economy, by the time you start exporting.
Even like, this doesn't even seem like a political view or anything. I saw 2012 Mitch McConnell sign a bill to something along the lines of helping hemp. I forgot what it was. I don't want to say what it is.
But... No, he did. He helped author the hemp bill. He's in an agricultural state and they have a history with hemp. And you know, my realistic and cynical side is, you know, the bottom line is the bottom dollar. And if your state's hurting for money, all of a sudden you open your eyes up to other alternatives and innovations. And that's why I openly preach that I am a capitalist. I believe in capitalism. So let's do it. You know, we've got something right here, right now that everybody can participate in and benefit from. And the only reason it wouldn't be moving forward is if people are, you know, creating favors and, you know, avoiding it like Hearst did for the same reasons. So yeah, I don't see hemp as a partisan issue at all. I see it simply as we're going to have to really come together to combat the corporations that don't want to see it disrupting their finances.
Got it. Because, yeah, even there are a few more Republicans, and obviously Democrats are looking to legalize weed. So, no partisan, just an easy come together, get through that, and hopefully we can have this great product.
Yeah, I mean, and you just struck a reminder to me. I mean, it was John Boehner who started, I forget the name of the company, but John Boehner started a cannabis company. I mean, who would have thought that? I may have an opinion on a guy that fights cannabis his whole life and then when he's out of office decides to make money off of it, but I think it just shows us the reality that we're dealing with and we need to, you know, really attack it in that manner. This is a profitable for everyone product. And thank goodness and happily, it's also a healthy, wonderful product for the planet and humans and animals and everybody. The soil, the air, I mean, I don't know. It's kind of crazy, but there's not much negative I could ever come up with about hemp.
Is there any negative at all? Like anything?
Honestly, the only negative is that it, you know, if we don't handle it correct, that the disruption to these businesses, you know, could have effects on everyone. But other than a disruptive business problem, I cannot find one thing wrong with hemp.
All right. So at the very end, I'm out of questions. Is there any big message, anything you want to clear up on, anything else you want to add on, anything about hemp to summarize this podcast?
You know, I would just say, let's, you know, take a look at hemp in your own time. You know, Google, just start doing some research and we need stuff to come together on, especially in these times. So I think this is something that every human can come together on is let's start growing hemp, being innovative, getting farmers back to farming and, you know, really getting America back to working and exporting and supporting our own economy in a really wonderful way that is good for everyone. So, and if you have any questions or want to talk more about hemp, hemphuntress.com, shoot me an email there or whatever. I'd be happy to point you in a direction of someone that can help you with stuff or help you in any way I can.
Got it. This is, again, FM 91.7 WHUS at the top of the hour. Check out the podcast at podcasttheway.com. And when you find this episode in the description, you'll see hemphuntress.com to learn more information. Thank you very much for coming onto the show, spreading your knowledge, and deuces.
Thank you.